Richard Crashaw. Chapter 1. A Supposititious Presentment of Her. A person who differed from the local wayfarers was climbing the steep road which leads through the sea-skirted townlet, definable as the Street of Wells, and forms a pass into that Gibraltar of Wessex, the singular peninsula, once an island and still called such, that stretches out like the head of a bird into the English Channel. It is connected with the mainland by a long thin neck of pebbles, cast up by rages of the sea, and unparalleled in its kind in Europe. The pedestrian was what he looked like, a young man from London and the cities of the continent. Nobody could see at present that his urbanism sat upon him only as a garment. He was just recollecting, with something of self-reproach, that a whole 3 years and 8 months had flown since he paid his last visit to his father at this lonely rock of his birthplace, the intervening time having been spent amid many contrasting societies, peoples, manners, and scenes. What had seemed usual in the Isle when he lived there always looked quaint and odd after his later impressions. More than ever, the spot seemed what it was said once to have been, the ancient Vindilia Island and the home of the slingers. The towering rock, the houses above houses, one man's doorstep rising behind his neighbour's chimney, the gardens hung up by one edge to the sky, the vegetables growing on apparently almost vertical planes, the unity of the whole island as a solid and single block of limestone 4 miles long, were no longer familiar and commonplace ideas. All now stood dazzlingly unique and white against the tinted sea, and the sun flashed on infinitely stratified walls of oolite. The melancholy ruins of cancelled cycles. With a distinctiveness that called the eyes to it, as strongly as any spectacle he had beheld afar. After a laborious clamber, he reached the top and walked along the plateau towards the eastern village. The time being about 2 o'clock, in the middle of the summer season, the road was glaring and dusty, and drawing near to his father's house, he sat down in the sun. He stretched out his hand upon the rock beside him. It felt warm. That was the island's personal temperature, when in its afternoon sleep, as now. He listened and heard sounds. Whir, whir, saw, saw, saw. Those were the island's snores, the noises of the quarrymen and stone sawyers. Opposite to the spot on which he sat was a roomy cottage or homestead. Like the island, it was all of stone, not only in walls, but in window frames, roof, chimneys, fence, stile, pigsty and stable, almost door. He remembered who had used to live there, and probably live there now. The Carrow family, the roan mare Carrows, as they were called to distinguish them from other branches of the same pedigree, there being but half a dozen Christian and surnames in the whole island. He crossed the road and looked in at the open doorway. Yes, there they were still. Mrs. Carrow, who had seen him from the window, met him in the entry, and an old-fashioned greeting took place between them. A moment after, a door leading from the back rooms was thrown open, and a young girl, about 17 or 18, came bounding in. "Why, 'tis dear Joss!" she burst out joyfully, and running up to the young man, she kissed him. The demonstration was sweet enough from the owner of such an affectionate pair of bright hazel eyes and brown tresses of hair, but it was so sudden, so unexpected by a man fresh from towns, that he winced for a moment quite involuntarily, and there was some constraint in the manner in which he returned her kiss and said, "My pretty little Avis, how do you do after so long?" For a few seconds her impulsive innocence hardly noticed his start of surprise, but Mrs. Carrow, the girl's mother, had observed it instantly. With a pained flush she turned to her daughter.
"Avis, my dear Avis, why, what are you doing? Don't you know that you've grown up to be a woman since Jocelyn, Mr. Pearson, was last down here? Of course you mustn't do now as you used to do 3 or 4 years..."